I've been all across this country.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. And you are listening to this week's episode of Monday Night Shaw. I am Kyle Shaw, a.k.a. the Canadian Goose. And joining me at this time is a longstanding PWA performer. It's going to be the Omen, Gabriel Lestat. How's it going, brother?
Things are great. How about you?
Other than falsely guessing people's title histories, this is take two, folks. I am assuming, though, that you have held championship gold in the PWA, even if it wasn't the heavyweight championship.
Yeah, so what I've held with the PWA is I've held the Mayhem title.
Okay.
That was fun, especially with my character. And then I've held, and I have a funny story on how I won that. And then also held the, at the time it was the Esteemed Championship, which turned into the Commonwealth Championship that you can see today. And that one, I actually dressed up the belt, modified it, so I actually had vampire fangs at the time, which my gimmick is a vampire, right? So it was actually really cool carrying around a vampire belt for PWA. And then and with my former gimmick, because I used to do a luchador gimmick a while ago for PWA, I held the tag titles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you used to have a former gimmick, but where did your journey into wrestling begin?
So it's funny because like a lot of people, we grew up loving wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. We've all had our childhood heroes. We grew up just loving it, knowing right off the bat almost this is something that's it's completely consumed me, and I'm being sucked into this to the point where it's in elementary, at recess would be basically me practicing the sharpshooter, Boston Crab, and moves like that on other students. Unintentionally, I would say I was actually a bit of a bully, but it wasn't my intention of being a bully. I just wanted to wrestle, so I was wrestling people. And then looking back, I'm like, man, I'm a part of my language, but looking back, I was like, man, I was a bit of an asshole. I really, really was. And then, sure enough, coming junior high, there's people that were a lot taller than me. And it's like, well, I can't do wrestling moves on all these guys until I get to know them a little bit more. And that's what ended up happening there. But, when I was, in high school, I still always wanted to become a wrestler. But I never thought that it would ever happen. So I have a funny story about PWA. It's how funny how things go full circle. I had a friend who played on a hockey team, a ball hockey team, and he knew the CEO of PWA, which was Kurt Sorokin.
Okay.
And so he's like, hey, you want to become a wrestler? I know this guy that has a wrestling company here. I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's like, hey, you want to meet up with him? I'm like, yeah, man, definitely. And so we went to a bar called Long Riders, which no longer exists. And we ended up meeting him, and it was him and Tex Gaines. And I think it was Tex Gaines I was talking to. And they're like, yeah, so what we'll do is you'll come down to the camp and to the school, and we'll basically throw you around for a bit, see if you like it. And to me, the way it came off was like, these guys really just want to beat me up. It was nothing about becoming a wrestler.
Okay.
And I think it was just a wording. It wasn't their intention. And so that never happened. So let's fast forward a little bit. I was done school, and done high school at least. And I played soccer for a good portion of my life. And I was at a house party with soccer players, would celebrate, usually once or twice a year, just a huge, huge house party with the players. It was a lot of fun. And I was talking to one guy. He wasn't a player, but he was one of the friends of the guys. And he's like, hey, so you want to become a wrestler? I'm like, yeah, man, but you know what? I'm too short. I bought into the whole thing. I'm too short. You know, I'm not even 6 feet, but I love it. And he's like, hey, but there's this promotion I used to work for. And he used to, I guess, help out with promoting and stuff. I don't even remember the gentleman's name anymore.
Okay.
But he's like, yeah, it's just called Moss for Wrestling. I'm like, do you have a phone number? He's like, no, no. But if you go on the website, this is the website. I'm sure the contact will be there. And so I go on this website when I go home, and I'm nervous and excited at the same time, because I don't know what to expect from this. Nothing could come from this. And so I ended up getting finding a number on there. You call it, and it's a pager, which is something that people nowadays don't know what it is. But basically, what it is you leave a message, and the person on the other end, it's not a cell phone they have, it's a little thing like,
it's like a beeper.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly what it is. And then they see a phone number on there, they call the phone number, and that's basically it. So he called me back, and the gentleman's name was Massive Damage. And so I ended up, he invited me down. And when I went down just to check out the cam, they were actually recording for CBC, which is really cool. So it's really neat. So I go there, and it's like a warehouse. So it's very grungy feel, but just, it's just hardcore. I love it. Like, it's just really, really grungy. Like just the bare bones.
Raw
it's
underground just, it's type like thing.
The meat and potatoes, right?
Yeah.
So then, they shoot this stuff, and I meet Massive Damage, pretty big guy, like, you know, he's like a kind of a bear sized, right? You know, like thick dude, mm-hmm. and long hair at the time. And then so I was chatting with him, and then I remember, you know, he's basically like telling me, you come down to camp for a weekend, try it out. We just teach you how to, like, maybe hit the ropes, bump a little bit. We learn, teach you how to learn how to fall, teach you some of the basics. And if you like it, you could pursue it. If not, you know, hey, like, you tried. And I'm like, cool, I'm totally down for that. But yeah, that's basically how I got my foot in the door for wrestling, because I did one of these small camps, which is a perfect way to introduce people to wrestling. And I remember they were teaching us how to take our falls. And the very first time I did it, all my bones just rattled.
Oh, no.
But that's how it's supposed to feel. Especially for the first time.
Yeah, and I remember, good.
No, it doesn't. But you know what, though? But it, right there, you decide whether you have the passion for it or not. Because right there, I told myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that's what got me back on my feet. And I continued going, didn't matter how much it hurt, you know. And for those that are listening, keep in mind that every time you see a wrestler take a bump in the ring, it isn't them just falling on pillows. Consider it, like, think about it like this. Each bump that we take, every time that we take a big fall, it's equivalent to being in a car accident, like a minor car accident, you know. So that's a great way to put it, because you're, you know, like, you can suffer a whiplash, your bones rattle and everything's kind of really jerking it all at once. And that's what it's like. So the first time you do that, the first time you feel that, especially if you haven't been in a car accident or anything like that, you're like, holy geez, like, yeah, this is jarring. Really, yeah, big time. And it's a good eye-opening moment for you, whether you want to do it or not, because the passion is either going to make you go through it, or if you're like, you know what, I love this sport, but maybe I'll just be a spectator. That's when you realize it, more than anything. That's when you realize it, and you'll know, you'll be true to yourself if you decide to either walk away or just be a fan or join. That'll be the moment where you'll know what you actually want to do.
Yeah. And the it's tough sometimes, because, like, I just, like, I've sustained an injury and you sustained an injury, and it's like, mm-hmm. you want to be there and, like, in the ring and doing everything you can, but sometimes you also have to just let yourself heal.
Yeah, and that's in terms of just the reality of the sport, right? We're in a very competitive and it takes a huge toll on the body's sport that we're involved in, right? It isn't us just going out there, and it isn't guys going out there and play fighting. This actually takes a huge toll on the body. So it's reality is, you might luck out a few years. I've went many years without an injury, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know what I mean? So it's but then this last year, for example, like, I've had a bit of bad luck where a year ago I broke my hand. No big deal. I ended up coming back. But then afterwards, I ended up tearing my bicep. And while I'm recovering from tearing my bicep, I pull my back. And then just recently ended up coming back to the ring. And my second match in ended up, looks like I got the diagnosis today, where it looks like I got a slight tear in my MCL. So it's like, so it's a little bit of bad luck at times, but that's, you know what, when I was in Mexico, what they said when things happened, it was, this is, basically they said, this is lucha. Eso es lucha,
yeah,
right?
It's so, all part of the game.
Yeah, that's a, so it's all, it's, it, it's all, it all comes hand in hand, you know, like it's, yeah, like it's, we love it, but it comes with sacrifices, and you're not gonna get you're not gonna get away without sacrificing your body, because that's just part of the game.
No, yeah. And I mean,
it is what
the injuries heal too. So like, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and that's basically it. Like, it's all about like whether you can bounce back or not. And I think so there's some injuries where you can't, obviously, but let's just fingers crossed that that never happens to us. But it's just reality is we risk it every time we go out there. And that's one thing that you know, like even me, when I'm watching wrestling, sometimes I'm like, oh man, they did a move or whatever. It's like
yeah, like, man, that crazy stunt.
Yeah. And it's like, I wonder what they're going to do next without actually taking that second to think, man, like I wonder how much that actually took out of their body. You know, like they could actually be injured right now. They could have, like, we don't think of it because we play video games and do all these crazy things in video games, and we almost become desensitized to reality. And the reality is our body is very fragile. We just go out there and we feel like Superman when we're out there. But in reality, my body is as fragile as the other people that are listening to this right now, you know. And it's just we might be a little bit more. We might be in shape in a way where we can actually take a little bit more of the hits. But a body's a body, you know. Like, you twist something in the wrong way and pop, you know, it can go. And that's just reality. That's the name of the sport. But I get caught up watching wrestling and sometimes forgetting that. Sometimes something might happen. It could even be the simplest thing, and you're like, and you don't think about it, but it caused an injury.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
We were talking, I think last week we were at the training camp, and like one of the moves that causes the most injuries is like a baseball slide to the floor. It's like so many guys have like broken their legs or rolled their ankle or done all kinds of crazy like damage to themselves just off baseball slide.
Like I'm gonna mention somebody who that happened recently too is Mo Chibari. He slid through someone's legs inside the ring and ended up messing up his ankle. I don't recall if he ended up breaking his foot, but it was something rather serious, and it was just a simple slide through the guy's leg, and his foot ended up getting caught on the mat. And that's just the roll of the dice with everything we do. It's just how it is. It's unfortunate. We never want to see anybody get hurt. We never want to be hurt, but man, even sometimes the simplest things can take you out. When I broke my hand, here we go. When I broke my hand, all it was someone jumping off the top rope outside to the ring, like from the ring onto me. And it wasn't even that. It was when I landed on the guardrail, the way I landed on it, my knuckle ended up on it and snap. Ooh. I ended up breaking something. And so it's like something I've done a million times. It's maybe not a million times, but yeah, that's a little over exaggeration, but I've done many times and it's like nothing. It's like I'm landing on the guardrail.
Yeah. It's not like you took a pile driver over the top rope onto a table with fire on it or anything. It's not like you were asking for it, you know?
See, here's the thing. Sometimes injuries are the simplest from the simplest things. The first time I ever broke something and suffered an injury in the ring was I gave someone a clothesline, like a cactus clothesline over the top rope. We both go over and land on the floor, and I just thought I sprained my wrist. I continued on the match, and at that time I was powerlifting, so I continue on doing that. I wrestled again. It was still a little bit sore. I was limited to what I could do. And then at one point I was doing deadlifts in the gym, ended up tweaking my back, compensating from my wrist. I go to the doctors to take a look at my back. I'm like, man, I hope I didn't slip a disc. And I walk out with a cast on my hand because it turns out that I broke my scaphoid, which is a bone in your wrist.
Oh no.
So what I'm getting at is all I did was clothesline the guy over the top and we both hit the ground. But it, you know, it's one of those things where you see it on TV and you're like, oh, well, they're going to get right back up. They're tough guys. They keep going. Mm-hmm. But apparently I broke a bone. You're doing that. You know, you don't think about it. You really don't think about it. You just do it. And as a fan, you watch and you don't think about it. You just, it's like a video game where it's like, oh man, they got enough energy. They can keep going anyways. Right.
Yeah. So. 100%. Like if you're not in there doing it, it's very, you know, you just don't realize the vigor of it or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's sometimes it's just a little freak accidents, and it's the simplest stuff. You know, I remember we had Sergeant Hazard. He ended up I don't know if it was like like breaking a part of his back or something. I don't know what he did, but he injured his back pretty bad. And it was during a schoolboy roll-up pin, which doesn't make any sense at all how that could be possible. But it happened. Jeez. You know, it's like it's sometimes the simplest things. And
did
it could
he
be
have
some,
to retire?
He's actually, he did end up retiring. He became the commissioner for, I think, the PWA Calgary events, but ended up actually moving to Saskatchewan because he had a, his other job that he did was, and does now, is he's involved in the Humane Society over there. So if like he's pretty much, I think he's spearheading everything down in Saskatchewan. He's pretty far up there. So it's a huge noble thing that he's involved in right now, involving animals and animal rescue and everything. It's just, it's incredible. But yeah, he ended up, I think he did just a few matches after that. I know he did a return match with a whole bunch of other people where Kamikaze was, and there was like a, it was, I think it was one of the anniversary shows for PWA or Night of Champions, where you had a team, Gamma Singh, and there was, I forget who the other team was, but yeah, he did a couple of matches after that. But yeah, it was one of those things where he, like, shortly after that, I don't even know if it was related to that. He just ended up deciding to be more on the, with the office, and then ended up moving away, you know, other opportunities. So,
fair enough.
But yeah, injuries happen, and sometimes it's the weirdest thing, and it's just that's part of the sport, right? It's a risk.
So right? You got back to just getting back to where we were there. You started training at Monster Pro Wrestling. Did you end up? Were they the federation you actually debuted for? And what was your original gimmick when you showed up on the scene?
I've got a funny story with that, Casey. They were the original gimmick that I like. My original character actually came from there too. So with me, I was one of those where I would play video games. I'd buy the wrestling video games back then, and of course, you're living your dream on video games because you can't live it through reality, right?
Yeah.
So I had a few names that few names that I wanted to use, and one of them was Acid with a Y, ACYD, and I thought that's pretty cool. I can make some cool things out of that. But if you really think about it, I'm glad that I didn't use that name. Yeah. And another name was Eclipse. Like Eclipse is really cool because if I do something like let's say someone's laying down on the mat looking up at the at the ceiling, and I do something off the top, I basically eclipse over them, and the last thing they see, and boom, lights out. So I'm like, it's kind of a bit of a metaphor to maybe possibly doing a finisher involving them laying down. So whether it's like the Swanton or 450 or who knows what, it could be anything, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, Eclipse, that's a cool one. So then when Massive Damage is like, what name do you want to use? And I'm like, I was thinking Eclipse. He's like, well, not unless you're 300 pounds.
Okay.
And then at that point, I was working at a production plant at the same time, and one of the guys was like, oh man, you know what you should do? Because I told him the name Eclipse. He's like, what do you think about Johnny Eclipse? I'm like, that sounds really cool. I'm like, but I'm kind of stuck on Eclipse. But then when Massive Damage shot down the Eclipse idea right there, I'm like, how about Johnny Eclipse? He's like, I like it. He's like, but because at that time, I was reffing while I'm training, so that way basically when you're training, you end up helping out. Like, you know, everybody does posters and stuff like that. Everybody helps out with the ring.
Yeah,
everybody works. It's a good community. Everybody works as a team. But then during the shows, my role was to be a referee, because this is a referee or be security, right? And I'm like, well, as a referee, I can be in the middle of everything, see how everything runs, see how the flow goes and with the matches and everything,
yeah.
And start understanding what it's like to be in the ring. So then I started reffing. So then later on, we had the talk again, and he's like, well, it's almost time to debut you. So first off, you're gonna have to wear a mask. So I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, because people know you as the referee. They don't want to see the referee wrestle later on. I'm like, okay, I get that. And then he's like, okay, so you'll have to get a mask. So I had to figure that out. And he's like, well, what name did you want to use? And I'm like, clearly he forgot our conversation in the past. So I'm like, well, I was thinking Johnny Clips. And he's like, no, how about Eclipse? I'm like, knowing that was my original idea. I'm like, I've met people like that before. Where they end up repeating what you said, like it was their idea. I'm like, but you go along with it because it's you get what you want. And I'm like, you know what? That's a really good idea. That is fantastic. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. I like that. Eclipse. Let's go with the eclipse. He's like, okay, cool. Then later on, when it was about time for me to debut, I was gonna debut in Manitoba, and when it was coming up to that time, he's like, you know what? Because I told him I was gonna get a mask, and he's like, you know what? Don't wear a mask. I'm like, what do you mean? Don't wear a mask. He's like, don't wear a mask because apparently girls are finding you attractive. So like that's basically he's telling me that's money. And I'm like, hey man, I already bought the mask. I'm wearing the mask. And then he's like, okay, well, if you want to wear the mask, and then I ended up wearing the mask, and I ended up debuting as Eclipse on July 2nd, 2005, in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Oh wow, that's a long time ago. That's 15 years.
Long time. Yeah, man.
That's
so... been living the dream since.
Monster Pro Wrestling ran Manitoba at that time.
So here's the thing. Over there, there's a gentleman named Marty Goldstein. He's been involved in wrestling since the 80s, at maybe even the 70s. I don't know, but the 80s. He's been around for a very long time in the wrestling scene in Manitoba. He's pretty much, he's like a historian of wrestling because he knows everything involving stuff from the 60s and 70s. He's brilliant, brilliant guy. And he was running an event for Canada Day that weekend. And they ended up having what it was basically as an outdoor festival. They closed it was in the Osborne Village area, and they closed down an entire street for Canada Day. It was for the entire weekend. It was from Friday, Saturday, and I think it was still closed down on the Sunday, or they might have opened it up on the Sunday, but at the very least Friday and Saturday. And they said on average there was about because there was about 3,000 people on that road, and when it was closed down to celebrate Canada Day. And it was really cool because we were outside this hotel that they just tore down called the Osborne Village, and it was called the Zoo. And inside there was a zoo, but it was a club called the Zoo, but okay. It was the Osborne Village, and the ring was right outside of it. Inside the beer gardens, which was really just a string that said Molson Canadian all the way around. But it was unbelievable. That entire weekend was unreal. It was a really cool experience and introduction to wrestling. I had my first match there on the second day. So July 2nd, because it was the whole weekend. But I reffed on the first day, which made sense, you know, because I'm not wearing a mask then, but I'm wearing a mask when I wrestle. So that way people can't tell it apart. It was wild. It was a lot of really good experiences, a lot of messed up experience. When I that's the first time I ever reffed a all holds barred match, which meant there was no submissions allowed. It was the strangest thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it threw me off so much.
Are they allowed to do like an arm ringer or anything? Or?
Nothing. You know what the finish? You know what the? You know how the match ended? It was someone got the guy in a headlock for the five count, and I had to DQ him. It's like those, I understand where they're trying to go with, but at least do a really cool move, like throw in the freaking sharpshooter or something cool. But it was a headlock, and I'm like, I don't know if people are gonna dig that, you know, and I don't know how much they did. It was it's just something that
has this gimmick match ever come back? Is it like?
I don't know. Maybe we should bring it back.
Does
you and I.
MPW do this on a like they have the Ripper Royal, and on the undercard is always an all holds barred match?
Well, I honestly think the fact that we're talking about it right now. Imagine if you had a good guy who he's he's an MMA guy, so he does a lot of submissions, mm-hmm. and he ends up in order to get his hands on the bad guy, the nemesis that he has. He has to sign these papers saying that the only way you can be involved in this match is if you don't include your submissions because they're too dangerous or whatever, right?
Okay.
I could see something like that. And in the end, it's like maybe the ref gets knocked out. Submission gets thrown on the guy. Guy does basically like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Bret Hart thing where he passes out. You know, I don't know.
Something cool.
Right there, the hamster's running. The hamster's running in my head right now, and I'm coming up with a whole bunch of ideas, and the dim light bulb is getting a little bit brighter right now as we talk. So
awesome. So how long were you with MPW for?
I was with them till about 2007, because 2006 was an amazing year for them, and PWA were both doing very well that year. They were the only two promotions in Edmonton, and at one point, Kurt Sorokin ended up drawing nearly 800 people with one of his events, which is really good, because I think they had Jim Neidhart on that show, as well as Bruce for a Beefcake. And then but then MPW, we were drawing about 500 people, but we weren't bringing anybody in. It was just local talent. So that was really good. It was like both companies were doing great. The thing is with us though, is it was on Access, like not like a fancy channel, but it was on an Access channel, coast to coast. We were we had television
solid
on Friday nights, and it was really cool. No, Saturday nights. It was really cool because we'd be done our show, and then we'd go to the after party, which was one of the sponsors, which was called Ezzy's at the time, Esmeralda's, and which was right down the road from where we were having the shows, and we were and we'd get to go there and celebrate and watch our. Not the recent show, but like an edited show from the past on there. So it was just a really wild experience. It was honestly, for someone who it was my first couple of years in the business, like for wrestling, it was miles ahead from where most people get, like not from experience on my end. I just mean like the like from professionally, you know, but yeah. Like from like being on TV. Having wrestling in front of large crowds, you know, winning championships, because it's like I was tag team partners with a guy named Kamikaze, very, very talented wrestler, who I think if he would have continued, would have actually made it to, at the very least, Japan, because he was just amazing. And everybody who knows of him and seen him wrestle would agree with me 100%. He gave up too soon. But I understand
definitely heard his name a bunch of times, for sure.
Yeah. Like I swear we should all have shrines of him in our homes. I'm kidding about that, but very, very honestly, very talented wrestler, very, very kind individual as well. So he honestly deserved the entire world. And him and I, we ended up actually capturing the tag team titles for Monster Wrestling and defended them in the States, which is really cool. We actually brought them with us when we were on tour and went on the States and defended them there, which was. Fantastic. It was really, really cool. And then I ended up leaving 2007, I believe. And honestly, I wasn't really happy at that time. I don't think a lot of us were happy, just because the pay structure changed and we weren't getting as much. And it was one of those things where a lot of people they have a lot of times philosophical
differences.
Yes. Yeah, so sometimes people, like when it comes to wrestlers, there's two reasons why we're unhappy. Sometimes it's because of the creative, the way we're being used, or it's because of cash. It's so two C's.
Yeah.
And with me at that point, like my character was being given large opportunities. It was great. I was actually. But when I was about to leave, I was one of the champions. I held I think they call it the interprovincial championship at that time. And but at that time, like we joked around. I remember we were calling it the intergalactic championship because the name was just thrown out there for interprovincial. It just changed because it used to be the junior heavyweight championship, and then they ended up changing it to interprovincial. And it was like we just joke around with it. But I was very proud to hold that belt. I was very proud to hold any belt that I had. That's one thing. I take that. Like I know a lot of people. Like it's doesn't mean that much sometimes to some people. But to me, like anytime I hold the belt, I hold it with pride. Yeah. I really, really do. Like yeah. it means a lot, right? And as it should, because the people see you as a champion. So to me, I want to portray that and carry that image on and show them that I deserve to hold that belt, whatever it may be. And I've always been proud to hold belts. And I don't know, maybe deep down a little too much in a sense, but I honestly, it's just one of those things where
yeah. I was the RCW tag team champion earlier this year, and it just, it kind of felt like a message from like whoever's in charge, just saying, hey, like, you know, we recognize that you're doing good work or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're caring part of the team, right? It basically says you're one of the leaders, and you got to take that and kind of run with it, because it's, you're basically given an opportunity, and if you end up dropping the ball, then do you think you're going to get the same opportunity or other opportunities in the future? You shouldn't. Yeah. You know, you really shouldn't. If you win a championship, you don't take it seriously. You shouldn't be champion. Yeah. Is the way I look at it. You really shouldn't. If you're not advertising and showing people like that you're proud to be a champion, then, you know, like, show some pride. If you're not, then man, they got the belt on the wrong person. You know what I mean? That's the way I've always looked at it. But the thing is, it isn't just, you got to earn it. You know, it's everything. It's an entire buildup. You've got to put in, you got to do your
100%. You got to do your work, right? If you just showed up one day and they're like, yeah, here, we're going to just give you the belt because, you know, you seem just as good as anyone else or whatever.
Like, that's happened to me. Like, that's happened to me. Okay. And it was funny because it was meant as a very kind gesture. When I first showed up in PWA, I was thrown in a tag team with Evan Adams. You seen him at the clandestine show. He was in the in the death match.
Okay.
And so I was thrown in a match with he was at PWA for a bit. And I came there from like MPW, and I was known to some of the fans, but not all the fans, because it's a different crowd, right? You know, they mm-hmm. prefer, it's a lot of people prefer that company or another company or whatever it may be. And but in my first tag match with him, we ended up capturing the belts against Scott Lee Crew and Bobby Sharp. And which at that time, it's one of those things where, are you sure? Because they're an established tag team. We've just been thrown together. But at the same time, it's like one of those things where if I'm given an opportunity, I'm smiling and I'm you're giving me the ball, I'm running with it.
Yeah,
and
make the best
did,
of it.
We did exactly that. We had a lot of fun doing it. And actually with that tag team, it was the first time I got to wrestle Jeff Cobb before we see him and make an appearance in AEW as well as New Japan. And ROH, and it was about first time I wrestled him, because he was actually just coming through. He came to check out Calgary with his friend Mark Anarchy at the time from Hawaii, and I was thrown in a tag team match against them, and it was really cool because at that time it was just two Hawaiians, and I'm like, this is very cool, this is neat. Not realizing, hey man, this guy's gonna be going to New Japan.
Yeah,
he's gonna be ROH's television champion. He's gonna be on AEW, he's Lucha Underground. Like, this guy, he made PWG. He did so much, and it's like it's funny how in wrestling, I say this all the time, it's funny how you don't know who's gonna make it where. Sometimes it could be just this one gentleman that you meet, and then next thing you know, 5 years later, they could be one of the biggest superstars, or they could be wrestling for one of the best companies, because you never really know. You know, and it's something absolutely incredible. One thing that was told to me last year too, though, it's you always show you treat everybody with respect. The reason being is, if you go up to the top, the guys that you pass going up to the top are the same guys that you're gonna be meeting when you come right back down. So you better be nice to everybody, you know. And it's absolutely the truth. And he's an example where you know, you're nice to him, and look where he's been, you know, and look where he is now. It's I'm rambling right now, but man,
that's an incredible. It's experience. Definitely good when you do like meet cool people in wrestling, especially like you say, like a Jeff Cobb, who, like, if he came in now, he could probably get away with being a dick to people, but you know, he won't do it because he's a good guy, right?
Well, what I'm getting at is let's say, because he looks like he just re-signed with New Japan, because he's been wrestling for their shows in Los Angeles right now, mm-hmm. and let's say that fell through, right? If let's say he was a dick to everybody, which he's not, but if let's say he was, then going to then when his contract's up, or when if it ends or whatever, then are these other companies going to bring him back? You know, and that's the thing. That's exactly what I was told was on your way up, be respectful to everybody because you're going to meet them when you're going to meet them when you're coming right back down. It's the absolute truth. It's the absolute truth. You treat everybody with respect, and we are a brotherhood back there in the locker room, and we should be treating everybody absolutely with respect. We got each other's lives literally in our hands.
Yeah, 100%.
It's also another thing we need to think about, and is if I wrestle you and I'm careless, I could break your neck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the reality of what we do, right? So it's one of those things where you be respectful and take care of each other, and hopefully we end up making some money, making a few fans, and making people happy, and put it on a hell of a show, and feeling it the next day, but making it so we can still wrestle the next day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, like 100%. You mentioned earlier that when you were with MPW, they had TV and you were performing on TV.
Yes.
Can you just give, like, was, I mean, I don't know if you were even aware at that time, but is there a difference between wrestling for TV and just wrestling for in front of the house crowd?
So the difference between wrestling, and they didn't teach us this back then. They taught, well, I guess, yeah, so sort of they did. Okay, so. So when you wrestle in front of a camera, you always got to make sure you got to do your best to make sure that you're always giving facial expressions and everything to the camera as well as the fans, but making sure that the people that end up right now, let's say, for example, I do a match, throw it up on YouTube, people are going to be watching it, right? So you want them to feel just as included as the fans. So you pay attention to the crowd, to the camera a lot, right? And that, honestly, that's the biggest thing, is being aware the camera's there.
Yeah.
Because if I'm trying to get the crowd going and everything, you know, like I got to make sure that the camera's there to catch that too. Right. So that way people at home can see someone like Hulk Hogan do the thing with his ear. You know, they can see his face while he's doing it, things like that. Right. You know, it makes you feel. Yeah. Cause if you're watching his back do to everything, it would take away from that completely. And it would mean like you'd be watching it, be like, oh man, like he's got his back turned to me and everything. Like it's a different way of wrestling. You just got to be aware of the camera. But honestly, we should be aware of the camera anyways, because it's usually always someone recording. So that's basically it. So you just include the cameras, just like it's pretending it's your favorite, your best fan, you know. But still, you're paying attention to everybody else because they're all just as important. Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing without getting too much into it. That's the biggest thing. But, you know, when we're at shows, when we're wrestling, it's being recorded anyways. So one of the things are is when you go out there, always being aware of where the camera is.
Yeah, that's right? Good advice.
Yeah, because right there, like, what's the difference between what we do and if it was filmed on TV? You know what I mean? In the sense of paying attention to the camera. You should be doing it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really it. The camera's there regardless, whether you're on doing what we were doing back then or doing what we're doing now, where we're sure it's not on a cable network or anything like that. But it's we're still throwing things up on YouTube on our library, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know I normally throw up my matches online once I get them on camera and just share.
Do you pay attention to the camera a little bit?
Sometimes it can be a little awkward. Like in Calgary, the camera's on the stage where there's no fans. So
right.
Like if I'm going to hit a big move or something, I want to be facing the people.
Right. That way you can sell tickets for the next show, right? So people come back.
Yeah.
Right. That's a tricky one. That is a tricky one, especially right now with the whole COVID thing happening, right? So it's like while you and I are recording this right now, we're in the middle of a lockdown where it's limited crowds, right? So you can only fit in a certain amount of people. So that makes sense for only people to be on one side, depending on the size of the venue, and the camera to be on the other. That actually does make sense because you don't want the place to look empty. You want the for your YouTube and everything that you're posting, you want there to be people.
Yeah.
Visible, right? You know, it looks better that way.
Yeah, especially with there only being allowed a limited amount of people and stuff.
Yeah. Because anytime you throw something on YouTube, essentially you're kind of selling something, right? You're mm-hmm. selling yourself and as a performer. And when people watch it, you know, like what you want them to see a crowd. You want them to see, of course, you and your opponent. You know, it's all eye candy, and you want them to get addicted to it in a sense, right? So if they don't see any fans, you know, maybe the candy you're offering isn't as sweet as it should be. You know what I mean? And so I totally get that. That's a difficult one. A good one to pick his brain on that would probably be heavy metal, because he's someone that's really good on working the camera as well as the people. And because he's phenomenal at that. So that's this, especially because you and I were both at Top Talent Wrestling Academy.
Yeah, 100%.
Little plug right there. But heavy metal, he's definitely one that's really good to pick his brain about stuff like that, because he's phenomenal at stuff like that.
Yeah, I find that he's been super helpful to me and whatnot lately.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, he's taking a liking to you, so well, yeah, which is really really good.
Yeah. How are you feeling about being one of the trainers over at the Top Talent Wrestling Academy?
So this is the way I look at it. So I'm honestly not there very very much. A lot of it is because due to injuries. Like I've just been this year has been the best for me with injuries.
Yeah.
And but it was one of those things where I was never intended to be one of the full time trainers. Anyways, I was more supposed to be one of the guys where if anybody's looking to like get themselves fit in terms of like helping them put on a build, that's what I'm there for, right? Because you know you don't want too many kitchens in the chef. Sorry, too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And the chef. I can't even speak English, but that's why English is my second language. No, I'm kidding. But seriously, like it's you don't want too many chefs in the kitchen. And so right now you've got MRB, and you've got heavy metal, and they run most of the classes. I've ran a couple of them, but I've been fortunate enough to introduce some of the luchador stuff, but MRB, he incorporates a lot of the stuff he did from this trials and everything he's done with WWE, so he brings that home, and majority of people here, that's their goal, is they want to go to a place like WWE. So I understand why his classes are actually super super beneficial for everybody that wants to join, because the majority of people, that's where they want to go. So he's the guy to learn from.
Yeah, he knows what they're looking for. You know, at least like he's been through their physical tryouts and he's been there, and they've told him, okay, yeah, you know, step forward with your left foot or whatever when you come off a roll, do it this way, you know. He like the physical like nature of it all that has been explained to him in great detail on numerous occasions while he was there. So like that's what he's teaching.
What he's showing is a lot of things where if guys want to get a tryout with WWE, he's the guy to pick the brain for, because he'll show you the drills that what they want. He'll show you what they want to see. And then it gives you that much more of an opportunity. And plus he's very patient. He loves teaching people. Mm-hmm. It's a passion of his, and he'll say it like he says it sincerely from his heart. And then you got heavy metal, and heavy metal like that. Let me tell you. And I don't know if people understand what in-ring psychology means, but I don't want to get too much into that. But this guy, he's a master, and with his mind, he's a master in the ring. He really is.
Yeah.
And I can't really explain too much about that, like for people who aren't professional wrestlers. But it's one of the things where he knows what to do in the ring, when to do it, how to get the best reaction, because it isn't just punching and kicking and looking to the crowd. He knows exactly when to do things and what to do. It's unbelievable. And then you got Marky, and so. Marky's one of the guys where he's been a very heavy fan favorite for a couple wrestling promotions in Edmonton, and so he's very well known, and his influence just being there alone is it gives a little, you know, it's one of those things where it offers a lot. It can offer a lot, right?
Yeah,
you know?
He's a very positive and upbeat guy too.
Yeah, and then you got a whole bunch of other people that you'll see pop in. You got Jack Pride that pops in. You got Taryn from accounting that pops in. It's like you've got, and I could go on.
Yeah,
I could go
Red
on.
Thunder it's, was it's, there one day. That was cool.
And he teaches class. He used to wrestle for Stampede Wrestling, so he knows a different style. And that's one of the things that I love about wrestling too. Is Everybody can contribute in one way or another, because not one, not one way is right all the time. Right. You know, like the stuff that from the stuff that I learned in Mexico, it's like that, a lot of that's much more different than the stuff that we, that's done here. The stuff that MRB has learned is much different than the stuff that we learn in the independent circuits. The stuff that metal knows is much different than the psychology wise than a lot of other places, and it's more intricate and focused on actually having a purpose than most people actually have in independent wrestling itself. He's brilliant. It's one of those things where there's so much to learn. It's a never ending sea of knowledge, and hopefully with us we can help those students. We can help them, you know, learn and kind of help build who they want to be as a wrestler. We're not making any cookie cutter wrestlers where everybody learns the exact same things and everybody comes out the same way. It's everybody taking a step back and looking at what we have. It's a huge opportunity for even ourselves to grow.
Well, I was just going to say, like, a lot of people think, like, oh, you go to wrestling school, you're there for, you know, 3 months, 6 months, whatever, and then you're done training. Well, like, no, continue to train as much as possible.
That mentality, to me, is a joke. That mentality is an absolute joke. I've been at this for 15 years, and I'm still learning stuff. I'm picking MRB's brain. I'm picking Metal's brain on a constant basis. I'm even picking other people's brains on what they think. Right? You'll always keep learning. And honestly, to be like, oh, I've went to wrestling school for 3 months, so I know everything. You know, I just put me on shows. It's like, no, man, you're not gonna get better by just doing shows. You know, it's repetitiveness. It will improve you a lot more, you know, and this way you can try things you've never tried before, learn new submissions, get better at your technical wrestling, you know, like learn different strengths and stuff. And you learn that in training, you know what I mean? But I get it though. I get it. A lot of places don't have any schools, and that's a huge bummer. So they don't have that opportunity. Here we're lucky. In Winnipeg, in Manitoba, in Winnipeg, CWE has their school. Right. Yeah. They have their school over there. So right there, you can learn from Mentolo. Mentolo, he's been in Mexico. He's wrestled for CMLL, which is one of the biggest wrestling companies over there. He's wrestled all over the States, all over Canada and Japan multiple times. You've got Hotshot Danny Duggan, who's wrestled in Japan. He's been all over the States continuously up until COVID, constantly in the States. He runs CWE. So he's running tours all across Canada. You've got AJ Sanchez, who's been in Mexico, all over the States, all over Canada, as well as he was just going to be going back to Mexico if this whole COVID thing didn't happen. So there's a huge opportunity there. But you look at other places, and there isn't that opportunity. There aren't schools, you know, like there there's a lot of cities and towns where there isn't that opportunity. So I get it if people are like, well, I can move away from home for 3 months before I have to come back so I can learn what I can. And that sucks, because you're not going to keep growing. You know, you're going to learn that. That's great. That 3 months is fantastic. Consider it a full-time job, because you're going to be there every day. You should be. But, man, you got so much more to learn. You're still a greenhorn.
Yeah.
You know, you're still new. You're green as grass, if you ask me. But if you, like, even after 6 months, you're still new. You know, even a year, you're still a rookie. You know what I mean?
I just think it's good to keep in practice, right? Like,
It is. Exactly. It is. But at the same time, you always learn. We're all still very new. There's so many things that I'm not even good at that I want to get good at, that I've got to keep working on. And it's one of the things where we have the opportunity to do that. Take it. You know, take it. Right now, we at least have it, you know.
100%. And just speaking of, like, cool opportunities, you've mentioned a few times that you you went to Mexico. How did you get the opportunity to go to Mexico? Well, when you were in Mexico, were you primarily there to train, or were you doing a lot of Mexican Lucha Libre shows? What was the nature of your trip to Mexico?
Okay, so that's... That's quite the loaded question. Okay, so the opportunity happened when Canadian Wrestling Elite, so the Danny Duggan's promotion in Winnipeg, they were having a tryout for, they brought Conan from AAA. We all know him from WCW, from TNA, and he was a huge name in Mexico. And there's a few cities in Mexico where he was actually has attendance record. As the biggest draw.
Yeah, I heard he was like the Hulk Hogan of Mexico in the early 90s and stuff.
Yeah, like he was a huge name. He was a huge name. Yeah. And so it was basically, it was a tryout. So so right away when I seen that, I'm like, and it was a tryout to go to Mexico. And I'm like, as soon as I seen Danny message a lot of the wrestlers and just sent it out there, because he does this all the time. He's done it for ROH too, where he sends a message like, hey, there's a tryout. If anybody's interested, let me know. And so I seen it right away. I messaged him back. As soon as I seen him, no hesitation, I messaged him. I'm like, hey man, fill me on the details and jot me down, because I'm down. He's like, cool. And he's like, you want to come down early, because we got a couple shows, and there's a show the day after, and sort of like the day of the trial and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, I'll come down. So I went down. We did and this is actually a really cool experience, is one of the former wrestlers, for his son's birthday, he hired some of the CWE staff to have a show at this guy's house out in the acreage, and for his son's birthday. And so that's I was real. Part of that, and that was a blast. That was an absolute blast, and I can't imagine how happy that kid must have been. And then I think they did it again this year, but unfortunately I wasn't there for that this year. And then so we ended up doing that. And then it gave me, Danny and myself, time to kind of catch up too, because we've been knowing each other for a long time. But, you know, sometimes because of just life, we don't see each other. And we're two provinces away. So then the next day, we did a show. And this is in it's a bar called Rookies, where they've been having shows for a very long time. And it's a bar show. And so I had my show there. And they had guys like they brought in Michael Elgin for it, which is really cool. I've known him for a little bit before too, but I don't think he recognized me after all these years though. So I didn't want to bug him too much. Like, hey man, you remember me? We were in Missouri together and stuff like this. And I didn't want to bring any of that up, because if he doesn't remember, he doesn't remember me, right? You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
He also. Yeah, it just anyway. So we did the show, and Conan was there. He was an enforcer, as referee, an enforcer for one of the matches. But he was watching the rest of the show. And so, you know, I go up to them, say hi, and everything. And after my match, like I don't like bugging people. I really don't. But after my match, it was probably about two or three matches afterwards. The guy I wrestled, Vinny Da Vinci, he's like, I think he's from Sault Ste. Marie. He's like, hey, did you ask Conan about advice? I'm like, no, I didn't. He's like, oh, I did. You should go ask him. I'm like, oh, I don't want to bug him. He's like, hey man, he's watching the show. Just go ask him. And I go ask him. I'm like, hey, did you like the match? He's like, yeah, it was fine. You know, at that point, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to bug him anymore, but I know he didn't watch, like he didn't pay attention to it. He forgot about it, cause he's already watched so many matches. You know what I mean? Yeah, so I'm like, that's all good, whatever. It is what it is. And the next day was a tryout. I remember showing up half an hour early, and no one was there. I showed up half an hour early because I'm like, I'm going to be here early. I want to get my mindset to it. Like, I was up from the hotel and headed straight down there. And I'm like, pardon my language, but I was pretty much like shit myself. I'm like nervous as hell. Because I don't know what to expect, and like I really want to go, and I don't know who is all going to be there. Because with me, I kind of psych myself out. I'm like with all the other guys that are competing, and not knowing. But it was just one of those things. So I ended up. So the ring truck ends up showing up. So we end up sitting up the ring, and this was in a gym. This was really really cool because the gym is called Brick House, which is actually run by a former wrestler. I think his name is Paul Arcidi. And he owns two gyms down there called Brick House. Okay. And this one's huge. It's huge. And it's got that like actual bodybuilder feel to it. It's got a good feel to it. So we set up the ring. Conan shows up, and the first part was actually a seminar where he's just talking.
Okay.
So he's talking, and he basically he's giving advice and everything like that. He basically introduces himself, says everything he's done. He's part of the office in AAA. And he was actually the one giving that advice about be respectful of those. He's actually the one that said be respectful of those that you're meeting when you go up, because you're gonna be meeting them when you come down. Because it's true, nobody stays on top forever. Yeah. And he was the one that actually gave that advice, and it stuck with me. And a lot of other things he said stuck with me too. And so afterwards, he's like, "Okay, so what I'm gonna expect from everybody is what I want." Is everybody's going to pair off, and you are going to have the bad guy come in the ring. You're going to shoot a promo, basically just 30 seconds of what you like, who you are, and just basically sell the match to me. And then the good guy is going to come in, do the exact same thing. Then I want you guys to have a 7-minute match. And I basically just want the good guy to have a bit of fire at the end, and then end the match. Cool. Okay. I'm like, well, everybody's picking somebody. I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to get stuck with. What I'm going to do, I'm going to wait. And whoever is left, that's going to be my partner. And after everybody selects people, I'm like, oh, geez, I didn't realize this. It's an odd number. I have nobody.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, man. So I'm like, hey, so there's a lot of good wrestlers here, but like, how can I impress them? And Zoe Sager was there, very good female wrestler. Mm-hmm. And she's tiny, but like, she's very athletic.
Fantastic wrestler.
So, yeah. So I go up there. I'm like, hey, cause she was with, I think, Zwicker at the time, teamed up with Zwicker. I'm like, hey, did you want to go a second time? She's like, yeah, sure, why not? Just without hesitation. Just, yeah, sure, why not? So I ended up, so I'm like, okay, cool. You guys focus on your match, and I'll come up with ideas, and I'll throw them your way, and we'll basically just go out there, have a match, and have fun. And so while I'm waiting, I'm coming up with ideas, and again, we're in a gym, and so Vinny Da Vinci. He wasn't taking part, but he goes up to me. He's like, hey, why aren't you wearing your contacts? Why aren't your eyes basically the color for the vampire? And yeah. I'm like, well, I don't want to be that guy. And he's like, that's your character. That's what you're selling him. And you know what? I was thinking, and I'm like, he's absolutely right. So I went there. My part of my hair turned gray. My eyes turned blue. My teeth grew in. And basically I was waiting, and Conan didn't see me until I went out there. So it was I was basically trying to give him that little bit of shock value, but if it wasn't for Vinny Da Vinci saying that, I wouldn't have done that. So then there I am. Zoe ends up having her match.
Yep.
And I came up with some cool ideas that I wanted to do. So, it's my turn to go up there. We're the last match. So it's my turn to go out there and shoot the promo, to basically sell them myself, mm-hmm. verbally, right? So I see this. It's a sandbag, but it's the shape of a human torso. I grab it. I throw it in the ring. And I said, I can't remember the exact wording, but I threw it in there. And I basically went off on a promo basically saying, Zoe, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I ended up going into the basically your father, I know your father died of cancer. And when I heard that, it hit me in the feels.
Is that true? Did Zoe's father die of cancer?
Then I smiled and I said, the feels that put this smile on my face, this right here, and I point down to that torso, this right here represents your father and what I'm going to do to you. And then she came out, and all I wanted her to do was, because she did a promo earlier, was just pound her chest, point to the sky and say, Dad, this is for you. We go out there, we have this match, It made sense. I was up on her for a good portion of it, and in the end she hits me with a reverse Rana, and it came out of nowhere. And I remember when she hit me with a reverse Hurricane Rana, everybody went ooh, and then we ended up, and the match ended up going really well, and afterwards, and it went I felt flawlessly, and then afterwards it was, he basically went up to me. He's like, basically he could critique everybody. And okay. So Zoe and I were still in the ring, so he can critique us. And he looks at me. He's like, how long you been wrestling? I'm like, about 15 years. He's like, that makes sense. Then that's when he was basically like, he talked about the match. Then he said, these are the four people that I could see going to Mexico with me. He points to one guy, points to another guy, to another guy. And then turns around and points to me. I'm like, thinking, fuck yes, this is awesome. Okay, doesn't mean that I'm going, but this is cool. Well, sure enough, I didn't actually get. I wasn't the one selected to go to Mexico. It was Roy Flash Gordon, a guy from I believe he's from Chicago, a very very talented wrestler.
Yeah.
And absolutely fantastic. And I knew from watching his match the night before against Kevy Chevy, they had a phenomenal match. And that was actually the one where Conan was the enforcer for. And it was incredible. I'm like, this guy he's tall. He's got a very good athletic build. He's athletic. The way he moves, very agile. I'm like, this guy's perfect.
The Chilean, you know what I mean? Sea bass.
The thing is with me, I was more of a brute wrestler in a sense where a little bit technical, but like very more aggressive than anything flashy. And this guy's doing flashy stuff.
Yeah.
And but not like super flashy, but just very agile, and his magic watching him was really, he's really, really good, very, very talented. I'm like, he's going to be the choice. And sure enough, he was the one chosen. I'm like, well, I knew it. Good for him, man. Like I'm one of those guys where if I see someone succeed, I put a smile on my face. And so when I seen that he was the one chosen, like, that's awesome. But then I still ended up reaching out personally to Conan, and he's like, I told him who I was. I'm like, hey, I'm the guy who was a vampire. You know, you met me at this time, if you do remember, and what are the chances of going out there? And all he said was, when do you want to come down, for how long? I'm like, fucking awesome. So when I ended up going down there, because I told him the reason I want to go down there is to learn the style of Lucha Libre. I want to learn that style. And because one of the things he said, and makes sense, is every type of wrestling in the world has adopted a portion of Lucha Libre. And it makes sense. You watch Japanese wrestling, they have adopted it. You watch American wrestling, a lot of stuff is they do some stuff that's Lucha, you know, a little flashy. WCW, look at their cruiserweight division. The majority of it was a Lucha style type, like, adaptation.
Yeah.
Right.
And Rey Mysterio, and La Parca.
Yeah. And with me, I love the Japanese style of wrestling. Pardon me. And so like, to me, this is one of the things where if I ever have an opportunity to go to Japan, which is a huge goal of mine, then to know some of this style would be fantastic, especially over there. A lot of the wrestlers, Japanese wrestlers, speak a lot of Spanish, because New Japan, for example, every year for an entire month, they do an exchange where they call it Fantastico Mania, I think is what it's called. And for an entire month, they got guys from CMLL over in Japan, and they got the Japanese over in Mexico wrestling for CMLL. And so they exchange talent all the time.
Okay.
And then, yeah. And so that's always been, that's been a huge goal for mine for a good while. And this was a good way to learn the Lucha Libre style. To hopefully one day, maybe, who knows, may open up the door for me over there, and it could help.
Did you do any matches for CMLL?
I don't see. The thing is, when I went down there, I was connected with a guy named Crazy Boy, and he runs a promotion down there called DTU, and DTU is affiliated with AAA. AAA is the company. Them and CMLL are two largest companies in Mexico, and Conan is in the office for AAA. And I remember when Conan asked me, "Do you want to go to Mexico or Tijuana?" I said, "Your decision, man. It's up to you. Like, you know better than I do."
You're the booker.
And he said Mexico City, because to him it's the mecca of wrestling. And I'm like, cool. And then turns out I go to Mexico City, and as a wrestler down there that just meets me, and he just ends up putting me on, we go on a train together, and he puts me on a bus going 2 hours away out of town in a place that I have never even heard of in my entire life. I'm like, this could be the end of me.
Yeah, you know, a lot of dodgy places in Mexico.
Yeah, I may not be coming back, but no, I was to an extent, I was taken care of and stuff. Like I'm very blessed. Like, let me tell you, like, there's some days where I hated life down there, but there's some days where I just loved it. I did a few shows down there, but primarily I was there to train. I trained harder than I probably have in my entire life down there. With the schools, I was down there, constantly making sure I was going to the gym. They're obviously their bodies are adapted to a lot more different training than ours. So right off the bat, I ended up messing up both of my calves. My entire time down there, and before going down there, I ended up messing up my hamstring. So the entire time down there, I had my calves and ankles wrapped up. I had my hamstring wrapped up super tight. But thing is like, didn't matter how much it hurt. It was one of those things where I'm like, I'm here to get better. You know, I'm not here to ride the sidelines. And it's one of those things where you kind of got to just kind of be a soldier and just tough it out. And I did, like I said, there were some days where I absolutely hated it, but then some days I loved it. And looking back, it's like, I'm glad I did it, because I'm welcome back anytime I want. So I ended up going down there, and they welcomed me in like I was part of the family. One of the guys that I met down there, without even knowing who he is, his name was Lowrider. He lives in Mexico City, but he had a house in the place Tulasingo, where I was staying at, and he said, look, if anything happens and you need a place to stay, I don't know you. But as long as you're respectful to my family, don't talk to my family when you're there, and you know, like, just give them their space. You're welcome to stay there, and you know. And then Arrow Boy, one of the trainers, said, "Hey, look, if anything happens, then I got a place you could stay at too." Everybody was absolutely amazing, and they welcomed me like family. It was really, really cool, and it was very nice to know that. I'm welcome back anytime, and it's like I still keep in contact with a few of the people from down there. It's absolutely unreal. I can't express how welcoming they were, how kind they were. And I know people talk about Canadians, about how we respect each other and we're very polite, but down there, let me tell you, they kind of blow Canadians way out of the water on hospitality. They're so nice, absolutely so nice, and so respectful of each other. And maybe it was just the town I was in, but it was something like, well, I'm very, very glad I was that's where I stayed. So the town I was in was called Tulasingo. It's in the province of Hidalgo, and Tulasingo is actually where El Santo grew up. And so he's one of the Mexican legends down there, kind of like Blue Demon, Mil Máscaras, and guys like that. He's one of those guys where they had movies, those really cheesy movies that we love watching. They're just awful but so good. Where if they're not wrestling, they're wearing suits with their masks. It's amazing, and so it was a really, really cool experience. And let me tell you, the injury, like, I ended up tearing my bicep down there. Oh, no. Yeah, because I came back a couple days earlier than planned. For that reason, I ended up tearing my bicep. So I had which is why when I came back, I was supposed to be on the clandestine show, and that MRB ran, and I couldn't because I was injured. So instead I was a spectator. And then for the match you were involved in, the tribute to the cluster match, it was I was fortunate enough where they brought me on to commentate for that match. That was a pleasure, because you ended up winning the match. That was very nice to see. But yeah, so I remember I was the my body, the right off the bat, like the drills they had us doing and everything, I ended up doing something to my both my calves, but I kept going.
Yeah.
But I remember going to this because the place was like everything's family owned over there. Like it's crazy. But I went to a pharmacy because I had so many. I've never bought so many tensor bandages in my life. I was wrapping myself up like nothing. It was like it was like I was a mummy. It was crazy. But I ended up getting this like go. I'm like, man, you know what? Like, just in case, maybe I should get some painkillers in case it becomes a little bit too much, because I don't want it to affect my training. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be able to go and I want to be able to go, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Fair enough.
I want to go. So I'm there to prove myself too, to an extent, whether it's to them or myself, you know, both actually. And then, so I ended up, I go to this pharmacy and I'm like, and they're all family run.
Yeah.
So it's not really pharmacists. So it's like kind of just hoping they know what they're talking about. So I'm like, and I know with tensor bandages, they didn't have very good tensor bandages. They didn't really stretch. They weren't very good, but it was one of the things where I needed it. But anyway, so I asked for these painkillers. I'm like, I'm speaking in Spanish too. And I'm like, I pulled my, one of my muscles and, you know, like, you got anything for that? And they're like, yeah, sure. We got something. They gave me something. I'm like, you know what? I better take one tonight, just to make sure that it doesn't hit me too hard, because then I don't want to take anything that hits me too hard before training, because then I don't want them to think I'm all drugged up or anything like that. I'm not one for painkillers, but I'm here to go, right? And so I end up taking one of these pills before I go to bed, and I'm glad I took it, because it hit me like it just had some messed up effects on me. No, it was bad. It was not that at all. No. Okay, so I ended up feeling a little bit groggy. I'm like, okay, that's kind of expected, which I don't want, obviously, but it's kind of expected. And then I woke up in the middle of the night shaking like I'm freezing, but my body was soaked in like the entire bed was covered in sweat. So yeah, and so I'm and my stomach didn't feel very good, and it took me an entire day for my stomach to get past that feeling. I'm like, thankfully I did it the night before, just to make sure that it was, you know, because all I wanted was like a Tylenol or something like that, right?
Yeah.
they didn't know what Tylenol was. They've never heard of Tylenol. So I grabbed that package that they gave me and just tossed it right in the garbage.
Jesus.
But yeah, it was one of those things where I just had to make sure that I stretched as best as I could, and hope for the best that doesn't affect me too much. That way it doesn't hinder me too much during my anything they want me to do. And it was tough. It was honestly it was tough. It was one of the time I was there was actually some of the toughest days of my life. Some of those days, and it was just mentally and physically, right? Because it's just is so different. It was great though. It was honestly like, I learned so much down there. I basically took notes. I wrote in a diary on my phone every day I was down there. I had a Canadian phone and a Mexican phone while I was down there. It was a wild experience. I honestly can't wait till eventually I can show people some of the stuff that I've learned down there, because that's what it's for, right? It's for the people. So I can't wait to basically show what I've learned.
Do you have an estimated time in which you're going to be able to get back in the ring?
See, here's the thing. So I did hop back in the ring about 3 weeks ago and did a show in St. Albert and the one in Grand Prairie. And unfortunately, the one in Grand Prairie ended up tweaking my knee. Of course, that's the 2020s. Nobody's here, I guess, right?
Yeah, no.
So I ended up tweaking my knee. Where it wanted to buckle the side, which was pretty messed up, and it was my fault. I did something weird. It wasn't anything about like who I was wrestling or like that. It had nothing on them. It's like one of those little things like we were talking about earlier. Shit just happens. Part of my language, and so I drove 5 hours back to the city and ended up in pain. But I ended up going to the doctors and actually as of today. The day that we're recording this, I got the actual diagnosis, which looks like I got a partial tear on my MCL. So it's just going to be a little bit of recovery, but I've already been given the thumbs up for physio, and apparently the MCL, if it's a partial tear, it will recover on its own. So it's one of those things where these injuries couldn't have happened actually a better time for the reason of the whole lockdown thing. So it's not like It's not like I'm missing out performing in front of like hundreds of people. As much as I want to perform in front of like even five people if I can, because this is what we love.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where if it's going to happen, right now is actually probably the best time for things to happen, because as soon as I'm 100%, hopefully things will be back and boom, we'll be able to perform in front of the hopefully some big crowds, which is everybody's dream and what everybody's hoping for. And hopefully fans, they want to attend these big crowds because everybody's itching for entertainment. And right now, I know some people are fearful and they don't want to go out in these groups or whatever to check out these shows. But hopefully when this lockdown lifts soon, and then when that happens, I'm hoping everybody takes advantage of finally being out and enjoying these wrestling shows, and all the wrestlers, I'm sure, are itching to go back. And yeah, like for those that haven't yet, and I'm sure you're itching to wrestle in front of a large crowd, right?
I'm absolutely like I feel so like just bummed out that I have to, you know, not wrestle for a few weeks.
How long are you on the sidelines for?
Well, my doctor told me if I don't have a hernia, that I have a pulled groin and I need to, I should sit out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Right. Are you getting anything? Like, are they doing any testing?
I went to, got an ultrasound today, and from what the ultrasound lady said, it doesn't seem like they found a hernia. So I'm happy about
that. That's good.
There's still some enlarged lymph nodes in there, which they don't know why. Yeah. But like, I don't know if that's what would be causing the pain, but it's really frustrating because like I want to wrestle and I have wrestled like this pain's been on me for like a month now. But so I've just been sort of like wrestling through it. And then there was 1 week where I took a couple days off and it felt like much better, you know, like the pain went away. And I worked on the weekend that weekend. And then on Sunday, I was back in training, and I just did something and came down on my legs, and I was like, oh, there's that feeling again. And then it kind of just, like, it got worse, and so, like, but they just don't know what's going on. So, I pushed through till last week, and then, you know, now they're telling me if it's, you know, if I, because the problem is, like, I get so paranoid, you know, that I'm going to just hurt myself really, really badly or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me start off by saying this. For those that are listening, you're actually one of the hardest workers I've seen in a very, very long time. You put all this effort in a training. You're there constantly. And then you're doing two shows a week. So you're constantly beating up your body, but you're giving it all you got. You're learning and training. You got probably more win than the majority of people that, if not everybody, in that locker room, just because you're, and this isn't knocking anybody, but because you're constantly training in the ring, and it isn't like you're going in there and just doing moves. You're doing all these drills that MRB is running you through, and for people that know MRB, he's known for making people do 500, 1,000 squats, and then run the drills, and the drills are the ones that some of the ones that they do at these WWE tryouts. So they work your cardio, they help with your wind, and then you start doing more things like the moves or other sequences or whatever he may have you do, and you're there constantly working. Like over and over again, I think that this might be your body telling you just need to take it easy for a bit. That's it.
Yeah,
your body's talking.
I was literally there like 7 days a week for like up until like that was it last week or the week before where I finally was just like whatever's hurting me, I need to take a couple days off. And so
you gotta listen to your body, man. And that's your body telling you need to take a bit of time off, and
I do want to be like one of those guys, like you said, like when your shins were busted up in Mexico, like, you know, I want to be able to push through. But I also, like, I've talked to a bunch of people and they've said like the groin injury is not really anything to fuck around with. So
if I was back home at that time and that had happened, I would take time off.
Yeah.
But it's because of the situation I was in. I was trying to prove it to myself, prove it to them. I wanted to be able to come back. I've had a goal, and that's why I pushed it. I made the training all the time. when, you know what, like, even when I tore my bicep, during training, and then I had it wrapped up and I still kept going, and not knowing what was wrong with my bicep, I still kept going. We were doing things where the guy would whip you, you'd run up the corner and then do a cross body, jump off.
Oh boy.
Spinner, yeah, that sounds like it would be. Things like that. And then at the very end of that session, he had everybody go on the outside of the ropes on the apron there and got people pair off and told them, hey, I want to see you guys like legit wrestle. Like, this is none of that play. Not like, make it as legit as possible.
Yeah.
You're going out there. I want to see either someone get pinned or submit. And I'm like, well, he's not going to get me to do this. I don't know what's wrong with my arm. And he called me in. And he said, Omen, get in here. Then he got one of the other guys in there. He's Junior, get in here. And then I ended up making him tap. I put him in a rear naked chokehold, I think it was what it was. And then I sent MRB the video. I'm like, you can't share this to anybody because some of these people aren't wearing their masks.
Yeah.
So this is just between you and I, and that's basically it. And I basically had to end up giving the guy like a legit rock bottom, just to knock him down. And he's getting up. I put him in a rear naked chokehold until he gave up. And then he got right back up after I let go, and he got right in my face. And Paranoico was a trainer. He looks, he's like, hey, what are you doing? You just gave him the fight. Get a step outside the ring. He was very
yeah.
blunt.
He was like, hey, it shows over, guys. Like, your match is done. Don't.
Yeah. And right there, I'm like, thank God, because I don't know what's wrong with my arm. And yeah. He could have went for it. And luckily enough, he didn't have a chance to go for it. I'm like, but I'm done. This is good. Everybody's pairing off, seems like once, and this is great. At the very end, he's, Omen, get back in. I'm like, fuck right off. I'm like, I don't know what's wrong. And then he gets another guy, and there's even more athletic. He's short. He's very stocky. I'm like, this guy's, ah, man, I could get hurt. I'm like, I got to end this quick. So we go. He gets a start. We go to lock up, and I just put him in a headlock with my right arm, and it took me three attempts to toss him over. Boom. And then he does a silly thing of trying to get up face down. So I put him on a front face lock, and I just wrenched it. I wrenched it till I heard some gurgling.
Oh, no.
When he's... Oh yes, I had to. I had to. It was either him or
yeah,
me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Him or me. I squeezed. I hear some gurgling. It's not tapping out. But then I'm like, you know what? This guy's a cool guy. I don't want to hurt him too much. I got him in a hold. I got to be careful not to let go of the hold. But I got him in a hold. I hear some gurgling. But I like this guy. Plus, he's my ride home. So I better. I go easy a bit on the hold, but he's not giving up. And I'm like, fuck this. Pardon my language. I'm like, screw this. Yeah. And I end up squeezing it till more gurgling taps out. And that's it. And I felt bad. But the thing is like, honestly, it's more about survival for me. Because I didn't know what was wrong with my arm. And this isn't us just playing around. This isn't us just doing any sort of sequencing like that. He wanted us to go out there and try to make each other tap. And I had one arm. And this was, it was dangerous, but at the same time, it's one of those things where he tries teaching his students certain things. Like at one time he was getting everybody to forearm each other as hard as they can. And the reason he said that is because you got to know how to take a hit, because if someone wants to take liberties on you, you got to know how to protect yourself. You got to know it's almost like,
You kind of have to know when to hit them back.
Well, it's what would Mike Tyson say? Everybody at some point should get like actually punched. I don't know his exact verbiage, but he said everybody should get punched at least once in their life just so they know what it's like. And it's the truth, because then you know you don't actually want to actually get in a fight, but you need to know, you don't want to be, if you get in a fight, you know, you want to know what it's like to get hit, so that way it doesn't like shock you. You know, yeah. What it's like. So and so he tries preparing his guys like that too, where it's like, don't let anybody ever take advantage of you in the ring. You know, you need to know how to actually protect yourself and fight back if need be. And he got us doing that. And I didn't know what was wrong with my arm. All I heard was a snap.
Yeah.
And it was just wrapped up. And I just tried protecting my arm. And it was kind of like more survival, actually. Like, and then, yeah, I ended up coming back 2 days earlier. And Lowrider, so a lowrider ended up messaging me. He's like, hey, so you still in Mexico? I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm heading back in a couple of days. Like, hey, why don't you come stay at my place in Mexico City just the night before? And all I was thinking was like, I would rather go to the airport and sleep there overnight just so that would make sure I don't miss my flight.
Yeah.
And plus, I don't know Mexico City. It's the one of the world's largest. I think it's the second largest city in the entire world.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's huge.
And there's
huge.
Even if it's not like geographically large, there's like an incredible amount of people live there. Like when your
plane is landing in Mexico City, it looks like a sea of a city, an actual sea of a city. It's the craziest thing.
Wow.
And so, but you know what? I told them, I'm like, he invited me to, in case I had needed a place to stay. He told me I had a place to stay. I've never met this guy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered me that. Basically, he offered me the shirt off of his back without even knowing me.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think that might be like a wrestling sort of thing. Because like, I know like I did a show for CWE in Grand Prairie. I was just like helping out with their merch table or whatever on that show. But I drove with Roy Gordon, Roy Flash Gordon, and Justin Locke. We actually did a podcast. Roy Gordon's been on Monday Night Shaw before.
And he's awesome.
Yeah, he was the Chilean sea bass in WWE like a week before that, so I was asking him all about that. but we just stayed at Spaceman Barry Grayson's house, and it's like, you know, he's a wrestler and he lived in that one town, and so that's where the promoter got a couple of the boys to stay. And you know, I think it's just like might be a wrestling generosity thing. Like I know I've had guys stay at my house when I was living in Red Deer and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But the thing is like, it was one of those things where I've never met this guy in my entire life. I've never met him. We never even met in person. We just had one conversation over the phone, and it was cause there was politics, stuff like that happening where, I don't want to get too much into it, but okay. It's one of those things where like, fuck, pardon my language. I'm like, I think I'm okay. Cause I, my rent should be paid, but it was one of those things where I wasn't, after the first month I was down there, I was in a little bit of a limbo because there was a lot of things going on, I had a buddy and his name Ryan that I met down there. And he's from Toronto, and he's the only other Canadian I met down there. And he was like, he was like, hey man, like I don't want you to be stuck in a jam. In case you're going to be stuck in a jam, because you're in a country you don't know where you are. But my buddy Lowrider has a place here. He's going to give you a call. He gave me a call using what we're using right now, which is he actually ended up calling my Mexican cell phone. And so he offered me a place. So when he said, hey, why don't you stay at my place before you fly back? I couldn't say no, because I'm like, I got to meet this guy just for the sake of continuing a new friendship and actually meeting the guy. Right.
Yeah.
So
he put his neck out there for you. The least you can do is show up at his place and, you know, have a couple beers or whatever.
Well, it wasn't necessarily a drinking thing. He did offer, but it was one of those things where we just ended up watching. We played a few video games because he had one of his emulators with a whole bunch of old video games. So we played like a whole bunch of really old games like Crash Bandicoot and stuff like that.
But, solid.
But then after that, we ended up watching just some MLW, and because he was watching that at that time. So I'm over there, and then and another wrestler that I met in Tulasingo that wrestled for a company called Vanguardia. Down there that I met through Ryan too. He ends up coming down there and ends up hanging out with us. It was a really cool experience. It really was. And the taxi that I took to get to his place was from the bus station, and they told me when you go to the bus station, ask them where you take the taxi from, because don't take any taxi because you know they could abduct you.
Oh, Jesus. I'm like,
that's wonderful. Yeah. So
taken.
Yeah. The system they have over there is wild at the bus station. So I go there, and this guy's wearing a big blue apron, like a little bit brighter than a navy blue, a little bit brighter than that, and it has a number on it. And he's like, "Hey, are you looking for a taxi?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Okay, come with me." So he takes me to his booth. This lady's behind the booth. She's like, "Where are you going?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm going here." And she's like, "Okay, well, it's two different areas with the same address." I'm like, "Well, I don't know which one it is." So I had to find out which one it was. And then they found it. And then they gave me, and I prepaid for the taxi.
Okay.
And then the guy with the apron takes me to a taxi, writes down the taxi number, and the taxis are all in a row. So basically they're basically almost lined up. Right.
All right.
So he gives me the taxi number, and he's like, "This is the taxi number." He gives the ticket to the taxi driver, and basically it's keeping tracks that way. They wouldn't let me get that taxi until I found out which of the two locations it was, right? They're that anal about it because they're trying to protect people, because it was that heavily it was known for people getting abducted.
Mexico,
very, very, very bad.
Mexico's so, a frightening place sometimes.
Yeah, and so I ended up taking the taxi at his place, and yeah, we I still had to tip the taxi driver afterwards, right? They expected, which I have no problem with because he got me there safely. But then afterwards, the next morning, he was supposed to have a buddy. You know, I'm supposed to give 200 pesos to his buddy that comes, picks me up, takes me to the airport. But his buddy slept in.
So I'm
like, fuck. And then so he comes outside, and I'm waiting outside. He comes outside. He's like, "Hey, well, tell you what, let's I'm going to talk to this cab right here." And I'm like, right there, I'm thinking, I'm like, "Man, I don't know about these taxis." He's like, "Don't worry. Over here, if you're with me, you're okay." And I'm like, "Okay, cool." Because there's a lot of crazy stuff. Like, I remember my buddy Ryan telling me one of the towns he was in was he was in a motel. And while he was in there, he heard gunshots go off for about 5 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Before they stopped,
he said, "Very long time."
What he said was, wherever they were shooting, they made sure everybody was dead. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's got to be very careful, right? I'm very fortunate. The town I was staying in was the friendliest town. I was able to walk around. I was able to take taxis there, no issue. And because I, to paranoico school, I'd take a taxi there every time I had training down there. I'd take a taxi down there and then usually get a ride back, or once I walked back and stuff. And but anyways, with Lowrider, what was really cool was, not long ago from when you and I are talking right now, not long ago, I'd say about a month, maybe a month and a half back, he was actually on AEW Dark.
Oh, right on. Good for him.
Yeah. So and as Lowrider, so I sent him a congratulations message, and I know he's running running promotions in the States. I think he's, or at least helping run promotions in the States, and he's there on a regular basis, which is really cool. Even right now with this whole lockdown thing going on, I guess the people from Mexico and the United States are still able to cross the borders pretty easy. Huh. Not like it is here, where our borders are pretty much closed, right?
Yeah. So,
which makes sense right now. So,
anyway,
yeah, it's wild. It's really wild. So.
We have been going for an hour and 35 minutes.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I am just going to get you to plug your social media. But while we're talking about your social media, let's just find out what kind of became the genesis for your idea to host like live podcasts on Instagram. And where can people watch them?
So the thing is, what I've been doing with Instagram is I've been, when this whole lockdown thing happened, I found myself, as along with other people, just really bored. And a lot of people, that's not a good thing. You know what I mean? It's like they need that constant entertainment, because when you're locked down, you can suffer depression and everything like that. Like you can't do anything. And some people, they it's just them at their home with maybe a cat and a dog. And it's like, it's tough. It can be very tough. So on my Instagram, which if you want to follow me on Instagram, which is @omen_g_lestat. So again, Instagram is @omen_g_lestat. I've been when I first started doing them, it was every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It was three times a week. I'm doing it 5 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time, and it was to keep people entertained during lockdown, and it also kept me entertained too, because I don't know about you, I'm sure you do it too. Is I write down a bunch of material to prepare myself for the conversation.
Oh, so no, I totally don't do that. No.
Oh, really?
Absolutely really? Not. Oh, no, I get on here and wing it, bud.
I've got almost an entire script of questions to write, and usually it's about 5 pages. This last one that I had with Bobby Sharp was 7 pages, which we never went through all of it, which is kind of the idea, right? Is I want everything to run smoothly and everything without any issues. And so what I do is I write down topics and questions that I'm going to be covering if we got time. And if not, if we veer off in conversation, no biggie. If we're storytelling, no biggie. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole idea is basically to keep things moving with the flow. So that way it's entertaining for everybody. And it's only an hour long because that's all Instagram allows you to do, right? I've been doing that, but now I brought down to just Mondays because things are opening up, people have a little bit more freedom, but I don't want to stop cold turkey because I've got a handful of people that have been watching me and messaging me even just out of the blue being like, hey, look, I like what you're doing because it keeps me entertained as part of my Monday routines now. And to me, that's cool. So I don't want to necessarily stop right now.
No, I don't think you should. I enjoy tuning in whenever I get the chance. And, you know, like you've had some fantastic guests on, you know.
Yeah.
Metal was on there.
It's something super fun.
Text games. Super fun. Yeah, lots of guys.
And the cool thing is for most people, I've been doing if I have the opportunity, some people like wasn't able to. If I have the opportunity, I do a graphic for it. So it's basically a promotional picture, which is customized for that guest, which is really cool. Just something fun. So I do it every Monday at 5 o'clock PM Mountain Time. I am planning on eventually throwing stuff on YouTube. Speaking of that, if people do want to follow me on YouTube, check out some of the stuff. Like I wrestled Scott Steiner, that's on there. I think my match with Val Venus is on there. I've got a Three Stages of Hell against BVD, Sheik, and MRB on there, but not new content because I haven't really done much since Mexico because of lockdown and injuries.
Yeah,
but that enough. Stuff will be tossed on there too once I start getting stuff going on there. But if you want to check out my YouTube, it's so if you check out the channel, which is The Omen Gabriel Lestat. So if you type in The Omen Gabriel Lestat, you'll be able to check out my YouTube. There's a person, she's under the name Melball. You'll be able to see she's done an amazing job with that channel for me. It looks amazing. If people want to follow me on Twitter, they can hop on Twitter and follow at Omen Lestat. It's at Omen Lestat for Twitter. And then if you want to follow me on Facebook, everybody's got Facebook. Just follow me on Facebook, which is Omen Gabriel Lestat. So that's a very easy one, just Omen Gabriel Lestat. Everything's very close to the other. But yeah, just give me a follow. I always love having new friends and everything like that. I always respond to messages when people message me, and it's just wrestling is a bunch of fun. Like we get to basically live our dreams in one way. So it's absolutely amazing. I love making friends, love having new fans, and of course the look at the friendships that we make, like you and I right now. You know what I mean? So,
of course, yeah, 100%. I like it every time you come down to the wrestling school because like you're totally willing to work with me and show me like new cool things that I didn't know before and help me with like things like pacing and just like even reviewing matches and that kind of stuff. Like if you're out there and you're considering being a professional wrestler, definitely hit up Top Talent Wrestling Academy and you'll get the opportunity to learn under guys not only like Omen but like guys like Metal and MRB as well, and Red Thunder and Marky, and you know, Zoe Segger's there constantly as well. So like it's just a great environment. Everybody gets along and it's very positive, and you know, everybody's very supportive of each other. It's yeah. If you want to be a wrestler, check out Top Talent Professional Wrestling Academy.
Yeah. They can hop on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you shoot them a message, they'll respond quickly because they've got their secretary online all the time to answer any questions.
Is Dylan Stone still the secretary?
Yes, he is. Yes. And I believe every time he answers, he's wearing his underwear. So it's one of those things where that's how he likes to do his that's how he likes to work. So
awesome. Possum. Alrighty. Well, thank you very much. It sounds like you have a ton more stories to tell. So I think we should probably do a part two sometime in the near future. If you'd be down.
I'm down with that. I'm sure you and I could probably talk for 5 hours if we had the chance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure we probably have at like some of those training camps. All right. I will talk to you later, my man. Thank you very much for doing the show this week. Everybody, look out for the Omen, Gabriel Lestat, whenever PWA Wrestling comes back to your comes back into fruition and starts up again.
Yeah, man. It's been a pleasure.
Okie dokie, bud. I'll talk to you later. Cheers.